Right, we're meeting today online, not online, but on tape, rather, with Wayne Gates. And let's start with your full name, Wayne.
Wayne A. Gates.
And your father's name?
Horatio Archibald Gates.
Wow. And his parents?
Bruce Gates from Cumberland, England, about 1905. And his mother, Catherine Campbell, from the Glasgow area, a couple years later. And they met at the University of Guelph, where Bruce was a herdsman and the dairy operator at the university. And she was the domestic for one of the professors there at the university.
And your mother's parents?
John.
Did we get your mother's name? Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Annie Rodell Snow. And her parents were John William Snow and Fidella Marion Given Snow from Belnafad, a mile south of the village.
And we have earlier an interview with her, right?
Yes, with you, I think maybe a couple of months ago.
Right. The Snows were early people in the community.
The Snow family moved into the Belnafad area in 1919, I believe, and there is quite a separate history that Joan has, I think, about the farm and everything.
What about the Gates family then? What brought them to this community?
Well, marriage, I guess. My dad, after the war, he spent some time in Halifax with the Home Guard during the war, and he was stopped from going overseas by my grandfather. And then he came and worked for Harold Cleve in Georgetown for a year, and about that time there was a change of farm managers or operators for the Fallbrook Farm at R1 Glenn Williams on the ninth line, and they moved in there in the fall of 1945.
And his work there?
He was the farm operator for, they had a herd of shorthorn beef and dairy cattle there, and raised fowl and provided all of the feed to keep them through the winter, along with the general maintenance of the property for the vice president of the T. Eaton Company. It was O.D. Vaughan.
And was that called Fallbrook Farm at that time, or how was it?
It was called Fallbrook Farm. I think the Vaughans named the property when they bought the farm in 1943.
And who did they buy from?
They bought from Sandy McKay, is my understanding. Yeah.
Do you have any stories you heard or any news from about that farm, about the McKays, or any history there?
I'm afraid that I didn't really realize that the McKays had owned the property. I knew that Sandy McKay lived out at Silver Creek at that time, and it was the subject, I guess, never came up until later years, you know. So
at that time, it was kind of the beginning of people from the city moving out into this area and buying up land, I think.
Yeah, I think maybe that the Eatons were some of the first who came into the Caledon Hills, so to speak, and that ridge follows down along the Niagara Escarpment, and there was people bought all along there. To my understanding, there was another Vaughan over on the 10th line, directly back of OD's property, and they're weekend places, and they kept these places, and it was the fashion of the day to keep their horses and maybe a herd of cattle and those sort of things, garden for the city kitchen in the big house in the city, because Mr. Vaughn was pretty well-to-do, as a lot of the executives were of the T. Eaton Company.
Was there any talk then when you were living there, or have you learned since there of earlier civilizations or community life there among Native people before the McKays and the McClures came in and homesteaded there?
Well, I think our first knowledge of any of that sort of stuff was probably play, cowboys and Indians and that sort of thing, but maybe about the time I was 7 or 8 years old, through my grandfather up by the Blue Mountain School, we began to realize that there had been Indian habitation around through a shoebox of arrowheads and spearheads that my Uncle Elwood had collected, and up to probably about the time I was 10 years old, that was the most that we knew about that sort of thing, you know.
Can you remember some about your early life there? You were a child when you lived there, or schooling?
My very first memories certainly are of the area, and some of the things was a daily routine of looking after the cattle. I was very much involved, or felt I was, in going to the barn, and one of the first things I remember was getting a taste of fresh milk from about 30 feet distance. As a kid, I would be standing around with my mouth open half the time, and my dad was a good shot. Yeah. And beside that, you know, trying to catch the horses in the barnyard, that sort of thing, to get on their back, they weren't too cooperative. You know, some of those things that we learn as farm kids about the birds and the bees, that sort of stuff, and not to to go near the solitary confinement for the clucking hens. And we would go and we would try to search in there and see if she'd laid any eggs, and you didn't stick your hand too far in there, or you got pecked right away, and they would go right at you.
Yeah. About schooling, you started school from there, did you?
I did. We were driven in the morning usually over to the Blue Mountain School on the 7th line, and Rita Shortle was my teacher from grade one, and that was the only year that I spent in school there, in that particular school. And later in the year, I think maybe in the spring of the year, we were allowed to walk home at night. And I used to, I remember walking home with my sister, and we were told if Bennett's bull was in the field with the cows, that we were to take the lower laneway rather than the upper laneway, because the upper laneway wasn't fenced and the lower laneway was, and we would go that way. But later on, I think probably in the end of May, for some reason I was left school and was walking home on my own, and that was the day I experimented with the planks in the dam, and went in there, and seeing as I was on my own, I wanted to see how fast that the water would go out of the pond, and I cranked the damn plank up and I couldn't get it back down. The plank, of course, was wet, and I was standing on the plank, jumping on the plank, and off my feet went into the pond, but I was lucky I was hanging on to the wheel that raised the plank, and that way I saved myself from a dunking or worse. But the thing was that the two planks were up in the air. I couldn't get them down, and I was a little bit timid to go and tell the men in the barn there, so I ran home and told my mom, and she called back and told them. And I think maybe the pond was empty by that time. So, or the lake, small lake is what it was. You know,
Did your family go into Ballinafad as such for
They came in to do midweek shopping at the general store here in the FAD. I believe the Merriam's owned the store at the time. And we had mail delivery from rural mail delivery from Glenn Williams, so we wouldn't use the post office. But I remember the Merriam's making a big fuss over myself and John and I and teasing us about the girls and all that sort of thing at that time. And we also bought feed and from the Kirkwood chopping mill or the grist mill, and I think some farm inputs from there, you know.
What about social life down in the farm area or in the FAD? Were there parties
well,
that you would go to, or your parents would
my
go?
Parents weren't really party goers, but I do remember coming here with the school to the Christmas concert and maybe a benefit dance or something like that. I remember being in the old hall at that time and you know, joining in the you know, sort of the end of the year celebrations, I guess, Christmas and all that kind of stuff was a lot of fun for the local kids. But we moved away from Fallbrook by the time I was going to be 8, and so there's not a lot of that part of our life that I remember from this area, you know.
What was the reason for leaving?
The family was growing too big. The house at Fallbrook was 2-bedroom, and by the time we were ready to leave, the Vaughns had decided that we were getting a little bit too big a family for the house, and I guess looking ahead and thinking that it was going to be a little bit of a financial burden for them to support the family, you know, like in terms of wages to my dad, and so he looked further afield, and at that time they decided that they would maybe move in, and they did move in with my mother's aunt Janie Given, who at that time had the farm left to her care, and that farm was located at the corner of the 6th Line and the Peacock Side Road, well into Erin Township. It would be Lot 7, Concession 7, I believe.
So that's where you moved?
We moved there, and we lived there for a year, and like a lot of family arrangements, you know, we lived too close together, I guess, and it started to be a little bit of friction over farm operations, and we stayed there about a year and a half, and then my dad decided, well, maybe it would be better if he went out and worked on his own and maybe built up a little bit of a bankroll, and I think his first job after that was in the brickyard at Milton, where he had worked at some time before that, and at that time my parents bought a house half a mile north of Brookville in Nascaway Township.
There never has been much employment in the Bell and the FAD area apart from farming and the odd small business. People have had to go to farm.
Yeah, it's kind of a service type economy. And those jobs that would create a bankroll for young people starting out seem to be in the towns, the local towns, and people often move off to find those sort of things.
On the other hand, now a lot of people are moving into the community, so the flow has been kind of two-way.
Yeah, this question was answered earlier in the day, but the automobile and the improvement in the roads and everything made it so slick to move in and out of town. And out in the rural areas, you're not living in each other's pocket. And those things that seem to be of a major bother in the town just plain and simply don't come up with a little bit of extra room in out in the country.
Yeah. So Anything that you remember as some of the good part or the good memories of life in this part of the country? Or?
It certainly is. I was of a nature that was very content in the country atmosphere. It was our interest in nature and things to do with the outside world were fostered by both sides of the family. My aunt Lydia was a bird watcher and nature lover, and every time at Christmas, I remember we would 2 years in a row we would get books from Audubon about the bird life and sort of thing, and it was always discussed about the wild animals, about habitat for the beaver, and I know that my dad put out salt for the deer, the odd bale of hay right across from the house, but it brought the deer out, okay, but it brought hunters as well. So that practice started to disappear, but it was one of the things that we used to do. We would drive up around the house, back of the house, or the farm, up towards the proper road route of the ninth line going to Erin, about 6:45 any evening, and we would see from 6 to 10 deer feeding in the fields there, and we just loved it. And that was one of the highlights of our day, I guess.
Anything on the other side, the tough times, times when.
I think the toughest time in that respect would be moving away, or anything even close to that was the rollicking you got at school from some of the older kids. And we used to walk home at night, and there was a young girl moved in. Well, she was a little bit like maybe 4 years older than me. Her name was Baumholt, and they lived in a trailer on the corner, the triangle corner at the 8th line and 27th side road that spring. And I remember her filling our clothes with snow and everything, putting us down and rubbing our face. The same thing as other kids experience with, moving into life and away from home.
Good. So at an early age, this community had some influence on your life in terms of understanding of community, I guess?
Yes. One of the strongest things, I think, was the cohesiveness of the community and the regard for the children. I believe that everyone to a person was on the watch for the kids. They knew we were walking home from school, and nobody ever bothered us. One particular situation I remember is we walked around the long way. We walked from Blue Mountain down to Silver Creek and then across 27th Side Road all the way, and it was my first experience with alcohol and driving. Was a man, I don't remember whether who it was or whatever, but we were walking along the road headed home, and we heard this car coming behind us, and we looked over our shoulder and we seen this guy weaving from side to side or whatever, and we immediately, like wild deer, jumped the fence and were gone into the bush. And so we listened until we thought he was gone. We got back out in the road, and he turned around and come back and asked us if we wanted a ride. And he must have been somebody that knew my parents, because he was rather insistent that we get in the car and go with him, and we were just as insistent the opposite way, and we just took off again and waited until he was completely gone. And then we went back and told Noreen Allen, who lived at the corner of the 7th line in 27th Side Road at the time, what was going on, and she, I believe she got the car out and drove us home, and that was the end of that.
Great.
Yeah.
Even though you moved away, you've kept some interest in this community, and lately, in the last year or two, you put a lot of energy into the project around the Fallbrook Farm and that house that you were living in.
Mm-hmm.
Did your family know when you lived in that house that there was a log cabin underneath the siding there and that it was had some history in that place?
I'm very certain that my dad would have known. And my knowledge or awakening to the fact that there was a log cabin there was one time that I went into the Credit Valley Conservation Authority offices, and that would be in the neighborhood of 20 years ago, talk to the people there. And what I was there about was to talk about getting some of the stabling out of the barn that hadn't been used for quite some time. And while in there, the fellow who was the manager at the time came out and spoke to me because he heard I was in the office, and he asked me if I had any knowledge of it being a log cabin underneath the siding. And at the time, I immediately thought of the windows in the bedrooms in the west end of the house, that the window sills were in the neighborhood of 16 inches from inside to outside. Okay, and I said to him, you know, it must be the case, because you know, otherwise, if it was a frame construction, there's no reason why those window sills would be of that depth. And so, I believe there is a very good chance that it's like that. And then all we would have had to do was open the attic door, or remember opening the attic door, and we would have noticed. And so I'm sure that my parents would have known that it was log cabin from that.
Yeah. You have put a lot of energy into trying to preserve that cabin and have it fixed up for posterity to know some of the history of that site. I know you've gone into that. Why did you put that energy in, and are you feeling some satisfaction that up to now the cabin has been preserved?
I think you could say that the interest was for sentimental reasons, and that I know that it's an integral part of the history of the region. And as we moved along, there was more and more things came to light, particularly after we brought Tom Murison in, the restoration man. Just one thing fell in front of another, and it swept us all in of what the possibilities were, what had happened, or whatever. And then another thing was that in the intervening time between the time I was 8 years old and I'm now 62, that there had been whispers around the community and conversation with fellows from the area, and Grant Baker was one in particular. His father, Morris Baker, was the manager of Scottsdale Farm, and they were across the fence neighbors, Scottsdale and Fallbrook. And Grant told us that when he was, you know, like he was maybe a couple of years ahead of me or older than me, and when they worked the field right next to the Fallbrook Farm, that they always turned up with the cultivator, always turned up arrowheads and spearheads. And his dad would be giving him a hard time for stopping there and picking stuff up, and because they wanted to get the spring plant again. And but later on, that developed further.
Well, we're hoping that that building and that site and that history can be preserved and restored, because there's a lot of stuff has happened there, and going back for maybe 500 years to the possibility of a native village. So appreciate all the work you've done on that.
Well, thank you.
Is there any last words you want to leave with this message to the community?
The only thing that has slowed us down in our resolve to keep the project to restore the Fallbrook Farmhouse is the red tape that's put in front of us by the various levels of government, and the frustration of getting permission to move ahead in the collection of monies for support. And we need official sanction to collect that those funds.
Okay.
I think that's
very much, Wayne.
Well, you're welcome.
Okay.